Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the, what day is it? March 6th? March 6th meeting of the Education Finance Division to order. We are just short, Representative Hamilton, of a quorum. So I think we can proceed, and we will may pause for a moment when we achieve quorum and then formally move your bill. But we've got two bills on the agenda for today. Both will be moved to Ways and Means with a recommendation that they then proceed to capital investment, because those are the folks who make the big decisions on bills like this. So, Representative Hamilton, if you'd please, we're going in numeric order. House File 1336 is up first. If you'd like to begin, please.
Right.
Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'd also like to once again thank you for coming out to the district in which I serve and tour one of our schools out there in the community of Windham. With us today, I have two bills up, again, within the district that I serve. And one is for a smaller school, Red Rock Central. That's the first bill that we're going to be hearing. In Lamberton, and the other one is for the city of Worthington. And it'll be interesting to hear the difference in dynamics. The first bill that we're hearing is, like I said, a small school. We're looking at about 459 students total, K through 12, total students. And with this school, I toured that, the superintendent, which you'll hear from in a moment. Bruce asked me to come out. We toured the school. And I just want to give you a perspective from my point of view, going through the school in a wheelchair. We left the office area, and we were going to an event that was in the auditorium. And the easiest route was to go outside again. We went down an alleyway, which is gravel, down the alley to the other side of the building, then up a ramp, a concrete ramp that they do the best that they possibly can to make sure it's ADA compliant. I would argue that it was equal to, if not steeper, than the ramp from the state office building to the Capitol. Everybody should take a wheelchair up that. It'll give you a wonderful exercise. And I bring that up because one of the buildings that we're educating our students in was built in 1915. Now, we've brought this to the voters, and we're having a difficult time getting these referendums passed. The next bill you hear, we brought that one to the voters five times. On this bill, and I'll let them speak to it, and for various reasons. One, the rural economy is in pretty tough shape, dire straits, if you will. And also, I believe some, not all, have some issues with the fact that the schools were consolidated. So one community that has the high school, they like the fact that it's located in their community. The other community that does not have the high school may not be as receptive. That's one of the issues as well that we're dealing with. So at that time, Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do is turn it over to my testifiers, and they can go through what it is, that a little more about the community and what they're trying to get accomplished.
Sure. Why don't we pause for a moment? We do now have a quorum. Representative DeMuth, would you have you had any time with the minutes from the March 5th meeting?
I have. I will move that. We'll accept them.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the DeMuth? Oh, we've got discussion. Motion, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair.
Ma'am.
I arrived at 10:26 and a half.
Ah. Ms. Sunderland?
We had already been adjourned, though.
Oh. My.
I just got my paper.
Okay. We're just going to move on. Any further discussion of Ms. Sunderland's precision minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor of the DeMuth motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Juergens, would you like to move House File 1336 to be before the committee and with a motion to be re-referred to Ways and Means with a recommendation to be referred to further to the Committee on Capital Investment. There we go. I got it out.
Yes, Mr. Chair, since you just
covered it. I will just make that motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Juergens. And before we proceed, one last thing, gentlemen. We've got the high school pages here. So welcome. If you could take just a moment, stand up, introduce yourself, and where you're from. We're thrilled to have you here today. Condolences. No, 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 no.
My name is Claire Willett, and I'm from Peter Prairie.
My name is Margaret Weiser. I'm from New Ulm, and my representative is Paul Forbeson.
My name is Adrian Grisha. I'm from Ohio, and I represent
Really? Yeah. Funny how that happens.
My name is Lily Klein. I'm from West St. Paul, and my representative is Rich Hansen.
She found out.
All welcome. I hope you have a great week here.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Representative Hamilton, we're back on you and House File 1336. If you'd like to hand it over to your first testifier, that'd be great. Thank you, sir.
First of all, thank you for inviting us down here to testify on this bill. My name is Bruce Olson. I'm the superintendent of schools at Red Rock Central. I came to Lamberton in 1978 as a teacher and a coach. I did that for 24 years. I was 9 years as the principal. I then was driving a bus for the district, and then they hired me back as the superintendent. So it's been a great ride for 40 years. I know the ins and outs of the building. I also have a contractor's license. There isn't a part of that old building I have not been in. So I think I can speak with some authority about the condition of the building. With me is Leonard Runk, our tech director. Leonard?
I'm here because I drove the bus to get him here. not quite. In front of you, and again, Mr. Chair and the committee members, thank you so much for hearing us today. In front of you, you have a short PowerPoint, we promise. And
Could you just formally state your name for the record?
My name is Leonard Runk. I am the work-based learning instructor and technology coordinator for the Red Rock Central District. Thank you so much for having us here today.
Okay, if you go to page 2, Red Rock Central is a consolidated school district in southwest Minnesota. We are in parts of Cottonwood, Redwood, and Brown counties. We are a large district. We have 380 square miles. We are a sparsity aid district. It is four former school districts comprised of Storden, Jeffers, Lamberton, and Sanborn. We came together and consolidated, I believe it was
1996.
Correct. And so we've been a functioning school district since that time. We, in an effort to be on page two or three, to use taxpayers' dollars wisely and efficiently, the Sanborn and Storden buildings were closed in 96, and then we were a two-building district until 2016 when the Jeffers building was closed. We are all housed in one campus in Lamberton. It's a tight squeeze, but we make do with what we have. Since that time, we have started to find that our enrollment is slightly increasing, and that's quite different for us. We did a demographic study. We surveyed our community about building projects, and the demographic study showed that we might be rising by 5% per year. And if that happens, that'll be wonderful. If not, we hope at least we can remain the same. Want the next page, Leonard?
Sure.
Page 4.
Directing your attention to page 4. Our building, as stated earlier, most of our building is 103 years old. Additions were in 1915, 1939, 1956, and the new parts in 1973, the year that I graduated from the school there. So I came back as a hometown kid. You know, with the teacher shortage, you got to grow your own. I'm serious about that. I mean, you know that, don't you? About 50% of the building was constructed in 15 and 39. 30% of the structure was about 1956. And you can see the building has some challenges. as the tech coordinator for the building, electrical, it's just, you just can't get enough power into those old 100-year-old structures. And so electrical outlets, the teachers get frustrated some days when the PowerPoint quits because the lights go out in the room and the outlets, fuses fail or whatever. So
yeah, one outlet per room.
One out. That was enough in 1916. So the building has some age on it. We're getting by, but we've got some challenges. And the school board did have a group come in and do a study on the facility, and they came back with many scenarios, and they're in the following pages, and I'll let Superintendent Olson discuss that.
The Ingenza company who we contracted with to do a facility study came back with multiple options. The first one was just to fix what we have. And the minute you take a hammer to anything inside the building, you've got to make sure the building becomes ADA compliant. Plus, you have to put in fire suppression. They're talking about new HVAC things. I argued with them that we had just done some heating and ventilation work about 15 years ago. They said, it's obsolete already. So just to fix the building, it's $15 to $18 million. If you look at page 6, their second option, we said we could use a little more space. And so we would add an additional multi-purpose area, which would be cafeteria and large activity space. If you want to call it a gym, it would be a small gym. And the estimated cost for that would be $24 million. If you look at the next page, you can see the diagram of what we are doing. The yellow in the middle would be the additional space for us. Option 3 was to do everything above, and then we would demolition parts of the 1956 building and all of the 1915 building and replace that with new classrooms. In so doing, we would be buying some land across the alley to expand our campus that way. And the estimated cost of that is $29 million. And that concept plan is the next page. So the board heard these presentations. And it begs the question, if we're going to spend $29 million and fix up an old building, why don't we just build new? So we asked Ingenza to bring us back some figures on that. And they estimated about $34 million. So with those kinds of expenses and with looking at the rural economy, they did not pass our operating referendum last fall. And we did survey the community, and we got a lot of, I guess we'd call it, negative kind of feedback about spending that kind of money. So, folks, that's why we're here. We need some help in some way, shape, or form. Anything?
Want to thank the committee and chair and also Representative Hamilton for the little stroll down our gravel alley to get you on the south side of the building. He was there to help present an award. We were named a National Blue Ribbon winner by the federal government, and so we really appreciated your attendance that day. And the students said your speech was the best, even better than the superintendent's.
There you go.
They hear me enough.
So let me just, option 4, building the new building on the athletic fields?
It would be...
What happens to the athletic fields then?
It would be adjacent to it. We would probably buy land adjacent.
Adjacent to, okay.
And, Chairman, we just sold that land to the local elevator here about 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And we work pretty well with them. We think we could get it back from fairly reasonably.
Okay.
So.
Right. Any questions from committee members? Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if that fourth option were the option that you go forward with, the existing building, would that be demolished? Would that be repurposed? What would be the plans with that?
Yes.
Superintendent.
Yes, that's a good question. Parts of it would be demolished. Parts of it that are pretty good yet, we would keep.
Superintendent Jurgens.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. So then the part that's repurposed, would there need to be investments in that as well? So I guess what I'm getting at is regardless of does there need to be work done there to make it ADA compliant or HVAC, electrical, all those types of things?
Superintendent Olson.
No, that's in pretty good shape. We do have some ramps and stuff there that makes that. It's our gym area, our auto shop area, fitness center, and wrestling room. And that's pretty good shape. So there wouldn't be a lot of expense there.
Representative Jurgens. Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for sharing this really kind of sad story of what's happening in rural Minnesota, but it's what it is, right? So you went from four schools down to one school, and could you tell me what's happening with the other buildings, the other schools that had to be closed?
Superintendent Olson.
The Storton building was sold to a local person in Storton, and to the dismay of many people in Storton, it's fallen into some disrepair. The Jeffers building we sold here a couple years ago, that's in pretty good shape yet. The Sanborn building had a very old section too. I'm guessing that was prior 1950.
It was the center main structure part of the Sanborn building was built in 1902.
Yeah. So another entity bought that and tore all that out, and they kept the gym and some other outbuildings, and they've cleaned it all up, which is good for our school. Instead of people of Sanborn driving by and seeing the old building that's dilapidated, they've got something there now that looks a lot better.
So. Representative Kunesh-Podein?
Yes, a follow-up, please.
Certainly.
So you have 459 students enrolled. What is the average? I'm assuming you have to bus these kids to the new location, to the consolidated building. What would you say is an average, you know, mile or distance or maybe time on the buses?
Superintendent Olson?
We're about 35 miles corner to corner in our district. Our earliest pickup for our students is about 7 o'clock. And our school starts at 8:30. Most of them are getting there by 8:10. But when we went to one building, we're so much more efficient. Otherwise, we had kids waiting for shuttle buses for 20, 25 minutes. And we have great kids. But idle time is the devil's workshop.
Same thing holds around here.
Yeah.
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
That finishes my question.
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing this and how well you've been able to create a really good district out of kind of a bit of a mess. So sorry for you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming to present your story. You know, these small rural schools are so important to our state and to our nation, actually. I think our students take such great pride in being able to preserve this small setting where they just feel like they're attended to in a better way than in a large school where students don't even know each other oftentimes. But I think one of your lures is your occupational training courses. And if your population continues to grow, you're projecting perhaps 5%, I hope that you can continue to build on this career technical area, because more than ever, we need that. And if you can be that hot spot in that part of Minnesota to get students to come and learn these trades and then move into the work world, we're going to be better off. So thank you so much, and thank you for upholding a great small school.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the population of the school population of your four school districts that are one now?
Mr. Chair, if I could speak to that.
Certainly, Ms. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The population of the entire district, including the townships and the four communities, is 3,900. And of the communities, Lambertons.
Rod, you just said it.
Yeah, 775.
About 775. And Storton would be running about a couple hundred, maybe 300. Jeffers about 300. And Sanborn, just shade under 500 people. and the rest would be in the rural townships. It's a very big district.
Yeah.
250,000 acres. 380 square miles.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
And to follow up on that, how many townships are in the district?
I believe, Mr. Chair and Representative, I believe there are 33 precincts. So the township and then the four communities. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that, though, but I think...
Representative Murphy?
A township would be six miles square.
Right, and he said that the district was about 36 or 35 square miles.
It would be 380... Or 35 square miles.
Yeah.
Or, excuse me, 35 miles from diagonal to diagonal.
Okay,
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, what's the next closest school district?
Mr. Rock?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We would have Wyndham to our south borders the district. Wyndham to Lamberton is about 30-something. We share cross country with Representative Hamilton's home district at Mountain Lake, and just put a plug in there. My children were involved with that, and they went to state here a couple years ago, and we appreciated the sharing with Mountain Lake. And Mountain Lake would be 37 miles from Lamberton. Wabasso would be about 13 miles, but from the southern edge of the district, you'd have to add in 30-some miles. And Springfield would be from Lamberton, 15 miles, but then if you go to the southwest corner, you'd be looking at another 30 miles, I guess, you know. And so we are a sparse, what's called a sparsity district, so we're kind of out in the middle of our spot there.
Representative,
I won't say nowhere.
Do you have the geography now, Don?
I
should have brought a map.
I don't have it. Much because I didn't hear what the last school district was.
The was Springfield. Yeah, it was Springfield. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so if those school districts are, the bordering school districts are so far from you, what accounts for the 5% increase? Is that new children? More children being born to the people that are in the 3,900?
Superintendent Olson?
That's a good question. I've wondered about that often. We have a lot of nice young families moving back to Lamberton because of internet access. A lot of them are working from home. They're having more children. They want to send their children to our school. And we have people coming to us from other districts now. It's kind of coming back to us. And I say, if you don't mind me asking, why do you want to send your children here? Because you are a good school. So,
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, following up on that, then the area that the school is in has good internet service? Is that correct?
Could I speak to that, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Runk?
As the tech coordinator?
Yes.
Within the four communities, we are served quite well. There are DSL access from the local phone companies. It gets more challenging out in the rural townships, but there are wireless providers that are moving into the area, and so it's getting better. But as far as the new standards, I believe, not to get too far in the weeds with 25 meg down and so forth and so forth, the townships, many of the townships would have trouble with that. But within the communities themselves, the 25 meg down goal would be met.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up.
Superintendent Olson.
Leonard probably doesn't want me to say this, but Leonard was an integral part of the RRCNet project, where we delivered internet access to community members. We started up with dial-up, and then we went wireless. The kids take their training under Mr. Runk's leadership. We have many kids that graduate from Red Rock Central that are not only working in tech jobs, we have some that are university professors in the technology field. And I can't say enough about what Leonard's done for that program.
Wonderful. So.
Mr. Chair, thanks to the superintendent, I guess.
All right.
Got to pat him on the back for that one.
Yeah, you do. Representative Murphy, follow-up?
Yeah, not a follow-up, that particular question, but I have two more. The four communities are, that you came from or that gave birth to the Lamberton site, are they satisfied that if there is a new school that it should be in Lamberton?
Superintendent?
Well, the infrastructure is already in Lamberton. And, you know, it's been kind of what has been said out in the hinterland, that the state legislature probably doesn't want to build any more cornfield schools. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the perception. Now, to say that everybody would be pleased that a new school is going in Lamberton, that probably is not true. But most of them, I think, would be happy if that was done, because then we'd have something.
Representative Murphy, last question. Two more? My word. And these are capital investment bills, so a little latitude is in order.
Sneaking in. They are indeed. And to that point, then, okay, so we've got a growing population. Do we just have cornfields?
That's Superintendent?
Are there other crops besides corn?
Well, yeah, they're diverse. Corn and soybeans is king. There are some livestock farms yet. We have a local ethanol plant in Lamberton. We have a very big... cooperative elevator. It's one of the largest in the nation. And they employ a lot of people there as well. Okay. Then there's your other businesses here.
Okay, Superintendent.
Representative Murphy.
And then that leads me to my last question then. You sold land to the elevator, mm-hmm. and now you think you can get the land back from the elevator? Is the school going to be really close to the elevator then?
Superintendent?
Actually, it was school ground that they bought just to store corn on. And so it was adjacent to our athletic facility. They have to go probably a mile from the elevator to go there to use anything there. It's a lot closer to our school, existing school, than it is to the elevator.
Representative Murphy.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, Ms. Superintendent Olson, then are you telling me that the new school, if there is a new school, then the new school, you purchased the land, would be within a mile of the elevator?
Superintendent?
It would be something like that. It seems like it would be very remote to my way of thinking from the elevator.
Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Detmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Superintendent Olson. A large square miles that you have in your district, does the state cover your busing, the cost of busing students to school?
Superintendent Olson.
Well, we get a certain allotment back from the state for busing. We have to file a transportation report with them every year. So, but it's not cheap. We just replaced an engine in one of our buses here a few months ago. It's $20,000.
Representative Detmer?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So your busing cost is covered by the amount of money you get from the state?
Superintendent.
That would be correct.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question then would be for Representative Hamilton or possibly for nonpartisan. So this may be more my inexperience, this only being my second term, but is this kind of financing and usually in the general obligation bonds to go to a school district, is that usual, or is this a kind of unique situation or first-time situation?
We'll punt that over to Mr. Sprung.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pryor, a couple of comments on that. You may have heard the superintendent refer to the cornfield schools. There were a series of schools partially funded with state bonds during the late 80s and early 90s. I think there were five in total. And they were under a program called the Cooperative Secondary Facilities Grant Program. So the state gave grants between $6 and $10 million to each of these groups of school districts in an attempt to encourage the districts to consolidate their programming. because of the locational issues, the result in, I believe, four of the five districts was that the school was built outside of any of the communities that currently had a school, and that thus why they were called the Cornfield Schools. Blue Earth, I think, was the exception, but the others were often built at a compromised location outside of any of the communities that had a facility. There was a second group of districts that have been funded over time with state general obligation bonds called maximum effort school districts. And these school districts were primarily very low-value districts, which very few districts would qualify anymore given the definitions in statute. And a total of about $300 million over the last 50 years has gone into that program. The third program under which school buildings were built, a few of the integration schools were built with state general obligation bonds. And then for individual buildings, there's been, in my time here, I think there's been six or seven individual school districts where the legislature has looked favorably upon district requests for state general obligation bonds. And I believe the last of those to have gotten state general obligation bonds was the Grand Meadow School. I think that was the last of the ones that got as an individual district request. So, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Pryor?
All right. Thank you. Quick follow-up. Is there anything you don't know?
We occasionally place Stump Mr. Strom Day, but we usually he wins most days. Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you again. And just one more question. So you have basically four different scenarios, sort of just bring everything up to code, and then you have options one, two, and three that would perhaps cost an additional $9 million or $14 million or $19 million. Two questions real quick. So do you feel that you have the resources available to maintain this building once it is done, whether at any of those levels? Of course, ideally, that $34 million complex would be, you know, perfect. Do you have the resources available to maintain it for years to come? First of all, and also, if you are having a hard time with getting your district to pass a referendum, is that going to be an issue in the future where funding might become another problem?
Superintendent Olson.
Well, yes, we would have the resources to maintain a building, either new or to fix it up. And a lot of what happens with referendums is going to be up to you folks as well. So, can we get a referendum passed? It's going to be an uphill battle with some of our constituents, but we think we can do it.
Representative Kunesh-Podein? Yeah. All right. Last question, Representative Sandstein.
Thanks. This is actually for Mr. Strom.
Ah!
We'll allow that. You're off the hook. Okay. My question is there a standard cost per square foot in building a new facility or expansion or something like that?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sandstedt, I don't know the answer to that. So.
All right. We have a winner. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone who present who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1336? Seeing none, Representative Hamilton, any closing comments on this one?
I'd just like to say thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Wonderful discussion, and I appreciate being able to get a hearing on this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. With that, Representative Juergens renews his motion that House File 1336 be referred to Ways and Means with a recommendation that from there it be re-referred on to the Committee on Capital Investment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your taking the time to come today.
Thank you, committee.
Representative Hamilton, stay right where you are. It is. Representative Daniels, would you like to move that House File 1832 be before the committee for and move to it that it be re-referred back to the Committee on Ways and Means with a recommendation that from there it be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment.
Yes, Chair, whatever you said.
Yeah, what I feel you. Thank you, Representative Daniels. Okay. Representative Hamilton, please welcome back to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. With me today I have Mr. John Landgard. He's the superintendent for the Worthington School District. And this is a little bit different scenario. This is the largest community in which I represent. There's population is a little over 13,000, I believe. The student population, K through 12, is 3,300 students, roughly. And one of the things I'd really like to point out, the city of Worthington is a very diverse community, and the census back in 2010 said that 62% of the population was of European descent or Caucasian. And so, again, a very, very diverse community and a beautiful community. Superintendent Langard will get into this, but we attempted five different times to bring this to the voter, and it failed each and every time. And again, similar issues. It's a rural community. It's highly dependent on agriculture, and as we know, the agriculture community is in tough shape right now. With that, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Landsgaard. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm John Landgaard, superintendent of the Worthington School District, and this is my 16th year in that school district. I started there in 2003. I represent the Worthington School District, which has the communities of Bigelow, Rushmore, Reading, and Wilmont in them, which are smaller communities. Our city is a little over 13,000, but our school district in general is right around that 15,000 to 16,000 overall population. In the 2000 census, that census data showed that our population, 9% of that population was 5 years old or below. So when I start to talk about in 2007, our student population in the school district was 2,150 students, and now we're right at about 3,300 students. So we've grown approximately 4 classrooms per year during that time span. It's easy when you talk about classrooms of adding a classroom, but it's those support spaces that also become extremely important. Hallways, cafeterias, kitchens, those type of spaces that need to also support the education environment. So with that, we have grown since 2007. We had 187 FTEs or teachers. We're going to be next year about 280 FTEs. So we've grown immensely as far as teaching staff as well. And we've run, as Representative Hamilton has shared, 5 referendums. The first one in 2013, which was an intermediate building and community ed. Intermediate would be defined grades 3, 4, 5. That was for a little over $39 million, and it failed basically 2-1. In 2016, we ran a high school athletic facility referendum for a little over $79 million, and that failed 2-1. In 2017, we ran just a high school, 1,100 student high school, for $69 million, and that failed 2-1. In 2018, we ran for an intermediate school and an athletic field. That was a little over $39 million, and it failed by 250 votes. We most recently ran one here in February 2019 for just an intermediate school, grade 3, 4, 5, 900 students. It failed by 17 votes. We have had countless hours and time and effort gathering community input, asking for input, trying to get the right solution for our district. Ultimately, our board will be meeting on Monday night to have further discussion on next step It will be an intermediate, which really only addresses the pre-K through 8 student body, does not address our high school student body. But I want you to understand, Worthington, you heard out in Windham from one of our teachers who has been instrumental in trying to make sure we get space for our kids. You heard from our school board member who has all kinds of data to share, and he can provide numerous accounts on the inequity and fairness that seems to exist on these things. But our school district, when I started in 2003, was 34% diverse. We currently now are 72% diverse district-wide. If I include our online school, which is around 700 students, that drops our diversity to 64%. But those kids never enter our buildings. So just to give you an idea, what we've done over the years to address our space issues, we had 21 computer labs at one time. We're down to 8, and the only reason we have the 8 is to address required testing, state testing. We continue to eliminate and downsize those types of spaces. We've remodeled storage spaces. We've changed certain spaces into what I'd call a teacher hub, where we put 10 teachers in a classroom. Very few of our high school teachers have a designated classroom anymore. A number of our teachers are what I would term on a cart. They go from room to room. So that gives you a little idea of where we're at based on our classrooms. And I want to make sure you do understand our space needs, not only our classrooms, but cafeterias, hallways, gyms, those type of things. So over the time period, we've estimated our overall needs in our district to address not only classroom space, but other spaces are about $80 million in needs. But we're a long way away from addressing that. Our oldest buildings are 1950s. Our newest building was 2020, and in 2000, and in 2000, one of our buildings was designated for demolition, but 20 years later, we're still utilizing that building. It's less than a quality educational environment, and that's where our community ed and ALC are housed currently. We are in the process of building an ALC gymnastics facility, and that will be completed and hopefully ready in the fall for us to have our ALC students and then gymnastics program. We used to lease space for gymnastics from the county in the old armory, so but it's become less than adequate. So overall, the request, or what Representative Hamilton has been so gracious to put forward, and you folks listen to our plight. We have worked extremely hard to get quality education field space for our students. In our conference, we're part of the Big South Conference, and the average square foot per student is around 220 square feet per student in that conference. Our square footage is 158 square feet per student. So we are in a position that we're having come this summer, we'll remodel 2 spaces to gain another classroom, but it's not helping those support spaces as well. We need another facility. And Borders at this point haven't been able to support what we're doing. We're getting closer, but this is a good support mechanism to help bridge that gap and help us get there, because as Representative Hamilton brought forward, our economy is ag-based. Eggs, yep. Folks are struggling, and it's hard to support, but there's also our seniors who live on a very specific budget, and they're struggling to be able to support any increase. So that's kind of where our story is and how we're there.
Superintendent, thank you for that. Can you clarify for me what space you're asking for here and why that space? You've run the gamut in bond requests to your voters, so why this space that you're requesting?
We feel, Mr. Chair, that it will be the intermediate school. It may be a 4-5 or a 3-4-5, depending on how the board determines that when they get through the next steps, and a community education facility. The community education facility is currently in what we call our West Learning Center. It's a 1950 building that was scheduled for demolition 20 years ago, and we're still utilizing it. It has some floors that have dropped in the building. It's not ADA compliant whatsoever, other than a couple bathrooms. We estimate to bring that up to date, today's standard, somewhere around $18 to $19 million, by correcting all its flaws and everything that needs to happen. So it would be an intermediate school and the community ed, and not necessarily tied together. There would be two separate spaces.
And is the choice of intermediate a function of where the population growth in your student body is, or because that's the building that needs the most attention, or can you just help me understand that, Superintendent?
The intermediate school addresses the major chunk of student body, our elementary and our current middle school. It allows us to split those kids up. It does not address the high school at this point. Mm-hmm. And we can make a little flexibility work, and we'll probably have to put an addition on the high school at some point in time to address that growing population.
Right. Thank you, Superintendent. Questions from members? Perhaps they exhausted themselves on the previous Hamilton bill. Oh, Representative Samstead.
Thank you. Do you have a plan then for your ALC? If you move your community ed out of the 1950s building that you've said the floors are dropping in, did you say you also had your ALC in that same building?
Superintendent?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we currently have them in the West Learning Center. There's a new building being built where our ALC students would go to for next year. It's a 42,000 square foot facility.
Thank you.
Representative Hewitt.
Just a real quick one, Mr. Chair. Your elections are kind of interesting to me. What is your how many registered voters do you have in your area?
Superintendent?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have I believe it is a little over 6,200 registered voters.
Representative Hewitt.
And how many actually vote? So what's your election turnout like?
Superintendent, elected officials are always intrigued by these questions.
Yes, the first early elections, there were somewhere around 4,500 to 5,200 voters. This last election was 2,700 voters, roughly. So it's dropping.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It goes with what we're looking at when these things fail and why they're failing, you know, turnout and population. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So does Worthington have any portables on your school campuses?
Superintendent?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we do not. We have chosen not to spend money because portables usually become permanent.
Representative Erickson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes, they can become permanent for a few years. I experienced that in Princeton, but I think there would be a way for you to get by, but I suppose it would look like to the community that you didn't need to build new then, so not a good idea probably. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I've become a little perplexed, or I didn't understand everything that you were saying, but the new buildings that you're asking for help from the state of Minnesota on are not for the general student population. The student population is going to be staying in older buildings with failing floors, and the community education part will be, and area learning centers will be for new students or for the special group of students rather than the multiplier, the students from K through 12 that you usually think is the most important people to educate.
Superintendent Lankard.
Chair, Representative, hopefully I can explain this a little clearer for you. We're requesting intermediate school and community ed is in the bill. Currently, our elementary is pre-K through fourth grade, and our middle school are grades 5, 6, 7, and 8, and the intermediate school would house grades 3, 4, 5. So we would be moving two grades out of our current elementary and one grade out of our middle school to go to that intermediate school. And then the community ed portion would move out of the West Learning Center. And then that would be a vacant building that we can eliminate and get rid of. And so I think I have it clear for you.
Okay.
And Superintendent, just to test my understanding, these would be two separate facilities, an intermediate school and separately a community education building.
Correct.
All right, thank you. Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, so the pre-K through third grade or fourth grade, how old is that building?
Superintendent.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is a building that was opened in 2001, so it's relatively new. And at the time that was constructed, it was the largest elementary in the state of Minnesota. Now I believe it's the third largest. From the front door of that building to the last classroom is a quarter mile.
Okay.
Does the track team use it for indoor running in the winter? I mean, just do the hallways? Representative Murphy.
And so the intermediate school that you're taking something out of and will have more room than for the intermediates that are already there and new ones coming in, how old is that building?
Superintendent.
So we currently don't have an intermediate school. We have Prairie Elementary and we have the middle school. The middle school was, I believe, a 1980s building, early 80s.
Representative Murphy.
And the high school, what's the age of that?
Superintendent?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the original building was built in the mid-1950s, and it's had four additions since that time.
Four?
Representative Murphy.
And when's the last addition to the high school?
Superintendent.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that was completed in 2014. We added 20,000 square feet, which was five classrooms and a band room and a storage area was the last addition. And when we built that, the cost of that was $6.3 million paid out of our general fund.
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, Superintendent, is the community school or community ed facility that you're asking us to build anew, is that, what size is that? And do you have a pre-design for that and the design for that?
Superintendent Lankard.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we don't have a pre-design at this point. We would be looking right around 40,000 square feet. Currently in our school system, we provide minimal early education. We're not able to offer preschool because of space, and so we're limited. We have a small, we're going to actually hopefully have one preschool classroom next year. But space has limited us to address that preschool, and we lose a number of our kids to the neighboring school district because of that.
Representative Murphy.
So Mr. Chair, this will be final. The preschool and the community ed, this is one facility.
Superintendent?
Yeah.
So it would be used all day, from early morning to late in the evening, or 24 hours?
Superintendent?
Mr. Chair, Representative, community ed, our community ed programming, which also includes our integration collaborative offices, that facility actually starts to operate at 8 in the morning, and it's busy all day long till about 9, 10 o'clock in the evening. And actually, the city has asked us to consider partnering with them to operate their activity space, which is something new they're working on and would be a part of their half-cent sales tax reconstruction. So if we could partner with them and co-locate this facility, not only can we develop a great partnership, we can actually expand what we're doing and offer preschool.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Superintendent, has the city offered to be a financial partner in this new endeavor with the community ed building?
Superintendent?
Mr. Chair, Representative, at this time, their funding would be strictly for the activity center space, okay, not community ed. And nor will they have the funds out of their half-cent sales tax because they have other projects that's designated to.
Representative Murphy?
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sandspeed? No, Ron Sandell. My apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Superintendent Lansgaard, I have a couple questions about the community, and thanks very much for the hard work that you do under difficult circumstances. I understand what it's like. The growth in population must mean that there are jobs in Worthington. Where are these families working?
Superintendent or Representative Hamilton?
Mr. Chair, we have JBS in our community, which is a pork production plant. They employ about 2,200 employees. We also have other major businesses, whether they're implement dealers that have expanded into other ventures. And one, what I call hidden secret, is Bedford Industries, which they were noted for twisty ties that go on your bread. That's where that business started, and they're expanding. Likewise, we have a strong bioscience industry in our community as well that have expanded. I believe our unemployment rate is less than 3%, probably about 2.4. Oh. So if you want to work in our community, there's jobs to be had. And we struggle at the school finding applicants as well for some of our positions, whether it's a cook, custodian. It's not just teachers. Which we struggle to find our teachers.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Over the last 20 years, has the commercial industrial property wealth of the community increased significantly as well?
Superintendent?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in working with our consultant that we work, we're seeing about a 6% tax base growth yearly.
Wow.
Some years it's a little bit lower, but the average has been about 6%.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question. Are the young men and women who are graduating from school able to stay in the community and be independent citizens and pay taxes?
Superintendent.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Yes, there are positions for them, and we're actually encouraging that. And we're in the process. Hopefully we'll get there. We've started a number of what I'll call grow your own program type in our high school. About 8-9 years ago, we started a CNA course in there that has led to that medical terminology. So we offer dual credit courses there, and we're in the process of working on starting a teacher pipeline grant for our district. We believe not only can we grow our own students, but we can grow teachers of color, and we can grow students that will be well educated and ready to be part of the education workforce. And how we're structuring this, and we're working with the local colleges and universities so that we're hopeful that eventually our students, as we move through, will not have to leave the community to get their four-year degree. So we're excited about what we're doing on that teacher pipeline route. But we have other ones that we're working on as well. So,
Representative Sindel?
One last question. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. How about property tax growth in and around Worthington? Have property taxes been rising, even though the referendums have not passed over the last 20 years?
Superintendent Lankard.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, we've seen some tax increase over the years. It's due to valuation changes primarily. Valuations weren't really correct early on here, and they've been making corrections to meet the expected standards that happen. So we are seeing some growth in taxes increases.
Representative Sindel?
Superintendent, Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Juergens, last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I have family in Sioux Falls, so I drive through Worthington quite often, and it's a great place to stop to eat at Taco John's, Subway, and fill up with gas. And one of the things that I've noticed over the years is the explosion, I guess you'd say, of the wind turbines in that area. And so my question is maybe more for Mr. Strom. Are there property tax benefits to the school district for wind turbines?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Juergens, no, there aren't any longer. When the wind production started, originally a portion, the decision was made fairly quickly by the legislature to create a production tax instead of having the wind pay property tax on those facilities. And when the production tax for wind was first structured, a portion of that was set aside for K-12 schools, a very relatively small portion. And after the first couple of years of that, there was some concern that this might create inequity among school districts. So the Department of Education, and I don't even remember which under which administration that was, recommended that the wind production tax not go to school districts. And so that tax is no longer available to school districts. But for 2 or 3 years, there was a portion of the wind production tax that went to schools.
Okay. Representative Juergens?
No follow-up, but both were nodding their head. I don't know if they have anything to add or not.
Gentlemen, care to comment on the wind production tax?
I remember that debate and when that was removed. And for those of us that have wind towers in your district, we spoke out against that change. But unfortunately, we lost that argument.
Thank you. All right. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the public who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1832? Seeing none, Representative Hamilton, any closing comments?
Just once again, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I thank you for hearing this bill, and the questioning was fantastic. As you can see, we have issues trying to get these schools built in our districts that we serve, and so I simply ask for your support and consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. With that, Representative Daniels renews his motion that House File 1832 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a recommendation that it be re-referred on to the Committee on Capital Investment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, we will have two more capital investment bills that I believe are scheduled for next Tuesday, and they are. After that, we'll just do kind of an informal ranking. So you get a little input on the conversation I'm told I then will be having with Chair Murphy. And the Capital Investment Committee will decide what the value is of our input in the end. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, something that could be considered, although you're not on the Tax Committee, would be increasing the ag credit, especially for Red Rock, and I imagine it would also probably be a factor for Worthington.
If I remember correctly, Representative Erickson, that was raised at our Wyndham field hearing, where Representative Marquardt, Tax Committee Chair, was present. So I'm not quite sure what plots and plans he has up for the tax bill, but that may be under consideration. Thank you. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.